shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kill Shuffle.
Hi.
It's a very wintry evening here in Dublin.
Yeah, it's also every season at once.
Yeah.
It's great.
Most of them, shades of winter.
To be expected. We're experiencing hell on earth. Yeah. Everywhere.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And this hell will be brought to you by the bands Tricot, Higher Power, Square Pusher, Band-Aid Brigade, and 90s icons Faith No More.
Yeah.
Those are the albums we're
and
talking
80s.
About this week. And 80s, excuse me. And actually, very, very, very late 70s too.
Yes.
So, so look forward to that. It's a packed show this week. We're a little bit late getting the episode up because I was in Amsterdam. The reasons are not important, but I did go to a gig, if you can call it a gig. Went to the concert Gebrouw with family friends. Yeah, with family friends to see... to see Bach, Schubert, and Schumann.
Ah, yes, you went to see Bach.
Yeah, I did, yeah. And I want my money, Bach.
How is he feeling?
He's, the dude himself. No, it was the Dutch Chamber Orchestra, I believe. And
wow.
Larry Power, the solo violist.
Max Power.
No, Larry Power, he got it off a hairdryer. But I gotta say, I'm not, although I do have classical music background in terms of like when I was a kid.
Same.
And stuff, and you and I both studied music at sort of secondary level. It's still interesting when you're not intimately familiar with pieces of classical music, how it can often feel like watching a film in a foreign language without subtitles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there were passages where I sort of thought, oh yeah, I could get into this, and then the whole musical direction would fly off the handle to a place that I didn't expect.
It's like watching Barry, if you remember that composer, the one who just made sounds from
well,
things.
Yeah, but it's not even... I almost understood that avant-garde contemporary composing more than some of the tropes of sort of classical and romantic composing that we were seeing. So it's totally out of I guess, my current comfort zone. But it was certainly interesting. And there were moments... funnily enough, actually, it's a thing about music that I tend to find as a general principle. If something is major for too long, my brain just automatically goes, lame... lame, this is lame.
Possibly, yeah.
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 But which obviously a lot of that
pop
music stays in a major happy musical tonality.
A lot of pop and modern R&B does that.
Mm.
Just kind of stays.
Yeah. Think like Happy Sunshine, like lullabies are always in major key.
Madonna.
Yeah. But you'd be surprised, like the cool edgy pop music is usually minor or modal.
Yeah.
So it depends.
Mm, yeah.
Like... art pop is definitely mostly modal. But anyway, I just thought it was an interesting experience. And I think my favorite was probably... there was a Bach cello concerto, which was pretty good. I wasn't a huge fan of the Schubert. But anyway, that's just a little bit different. And
Sorry, Bert.
And then you went to see Dearon Grey in London.
I did. For the second time. For reals.
Mm.
Same time this tour. Even better.
Great.
Better, even abroad. Like... almost as if they had something to really prove to the Western audiences, who adopted a lot of the tendencies the Eastern audiences had.
Really,
like the kind of like bobbing your hand to
the beat
as well as headbanging. That's kind of a thing they do. Which is
I
fun.
Feel like any music. We'll discuss maybe some of it later on in the show. But any music with good bounce.
Yeah,
and that new Dearon Grey record definitely had a little bit of new metal bounce to it, so
yeah,
I could definitely see that being a thing.
Yeah, the metallic side of that album lends really well live.
Yeah,
once again, just great performances. They played a lot from Withering to Death, or a lot compared to most.
Yeah,
and yeah, I just can't wait for this goddamn tour to be over so I can see them play various songs instead of an album.
Yeah,
no matter how much I like a band, I want to see a playlist by the fans or stuff like that, like Devin Townsend did.
Yeah.
And I love when bands do that. Bands like...
it's funny too, because I feel like we're at the point in that album cycle that I would have expected them to be playing a greatest hit set by now. But I suppose they have so many places they need to visit.
Yeah.
Is this it, what I'm
they're
asking?
They're finishing
is,
it off in yeah. May for the thing they're filming.
Right.
They usually film like a Blu-ray. That's oh, just sure. a thing bands do.
But have they already visited, like, have they already visited London and stuff no. on this album? Or is that the first, I wonder, is that the first time?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, then it makes sense. Then it makes sense. Because it has been, it's close to 2 years since that record
yeah,
came out.
Yeah, I think so. They last visited London before
yeah,
the okay. album came out.
Like, it may be even in the run-up where they would yeah. have been playing one or two tracks. And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because usually when an album has been out about 2 years is when bands go on their sort of greatest hits pick and mix yeah. type set list.
Like they don't stop. Like there's kind of a band that takes about a month and a half ish off and then gets straight back to it. And some of those members don't even stop. Some are writing in the background while vocalists rest. Like that.
Yeah.
It's not just Darren Gray. It's a lot of it's touring bands.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's if you don't if you're not working on something, you know, if you're not you're basically you're running to sort of stay still. You have to constantly be working on things so that the next you can kind of tee up whatever's coming next. So yeah, so speaking of bands that are playing albums in full, I went to see Tenacious D last night and they sort of screened slash played Post-Apocalypto from start to finish, all 30 minutes of the
your favorite clip art paint studio performance
PowerPoint cartoon what I will say is neither you nor I were particularly kind to Post-Apocalypto when we reviewed it, and I might award it one extra point out of 10 in the live environment. You know, it was quite funny.
Was that due to the improv? The flow of what they do live, and because it's live?
Yes, there was, there being a live energy to the songs, because what would happen was they would project like 2 or 3 minutes of the cartoon, and the song would come along, and the projector screen would become semi-transparent, and you could see Jack and Cage and the band playing the song behind the curtain, and, they gave it socks. They played the songs really, really well. The songs came across well. And also seeing giant cocks in an arena projected on a screen, it's funny. Like it's much more funny than it is watching it on your phone.
Real crudely drawn.
Yeah.
Dong.
Yeah, and some of the lines really do tickle me. You know, when, for example, when it's expected that Jack will turn down the offer to go on the spaceship with Yo-Yo Ma and Elon Musk, and he turns around to Kyle and says, "I'm sorry, Kyle. I've got to go."
Yeah,
stuff like that is great.
In theory, it's a giggle thing, which is why the idea is probably sounded funnier in your head writing it. But,
yeah, no, it's okay. But it came across. And listen, I wanted to be on their side because I knew we were getting it in full. And so, you know, by the time it was done, I was ready for the greatest hit set list. So we got you got Kickapoo, you got Beelzebos, you got Fucker Gently, Double Team I always think is fantastic.
But what
live.
Didn't we get?
We didn't get Kielbasa, we didn't get City Hall.
No.
We didn't get Master Exploder.
That's absurd.
There's always going to be songs that you don't get. But you can't be upset about that. Just happy that you got the ones you did and I liked every song they played. And I was very happy when Jack busted out the Saxaboom.
I'm glad he brings that places.
And he did not stop that saxophone solo.
The Fisher Price saxophone.
Yes.
Right.
Every single person in that arena was dancing. He made sure of it. So he basically bullied us into dancing to the saxophone. So that one was fantastic. So it was a great night's entertainment. Unless you've been to any more shows, I think it might be time to crack into the album reviews.
I believe it is
because it's getting late and.
It's not.
Where would you like to start? Dealer's choice.
Fuck. Jeez, let's start with Tricod.
Okay, Tricod from Kyoto. This is the third. I believe it's their fourth album.
Yeah. The EP last year.
Yeah,
that was fun.
So this is actually, I think, possibly a milestone in Kill Shuffle history. I think this album, which is called Black or the Black Album. I can't remember what the Japanese word is, but the cover is enough to give you a hint. It's a completely black blank square that I thought was a glitch at first, but turns out that's the cover art. It's the third release we've reviewed by any band, unless you can think of another. I don't think I can.
This is from a fairly new band.
Yeah, reasonably new.
2014-ish. So
yeah,
not too far.
That's right.
There's two albums.
That's right. We discussed their third album, Three. We discussed their last EP, Repeat, and now here we are talking about Black.
Yes.
So Maybe you could do a quick go of summing up their sound. I'm sure we've probably done it a million times on the show before, but roughly speaking, what do Tricot sound like?
Up to now or this album?
Is there a huge difference?
I'd say a jump. There's okay. a jump.
Well, then describe how they sound on this album.
Well, I'd say I don't know if I want to put it with them giving it real gusto to the fact that they're now on a major label.
Mm.
For this album,
mm-hmm.
with shiny new Fender Strats and Gibson the Sunburst one, really nice guitar,
Les Paul,
yeah,
right,
yeah. They now have all that equipment, so okay. that dictates, of course,
they got sponsors,
different sounds and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A will to write better, and I guess yeah, they go ham on that, I think, with a lot more of a ferocity.
Okay.
Than last time. I think last time was kind of felt more avant-garde-y.
Mm.
As well as the EP and then the album preceding that.
Mm.
I'm not sure if you felt it was a bit
I certainly felt more in the J-pop-ish
realm.
There was more in J-pop, and then they also pushed it a little bit further into that math rock air. Like, they're described as a math rock band, whereas I do feel there's not very many elements of math rock in what they do, apart from maybe the guitar tone.
I'd say there's almost as much.
It's more indie rock
complexity that Light has. Mm. I think there's. I see a lot of mm-hmm. insanely complex shit going down on this
mm.
at parts. It's just mm-hmm. insanely weird stuff.
Mm.
To the point that I don't know how they sing over it
mm, yeah.
and play it at the same time. It's just that kind of way it goes, and it blasts off this album.
Yeah,
I thought with a 2-minute song,
it's pretty quick. Yeah, the first track, "Do Not Mix."
I think it's pretty kind of Billy Talented with its real kind of a punch.
That yeah, it's quite high octane, and the album does definitely ramp up at points.
Yeah, but it does take time to breathe. Though I'd say for some it's a bit frantic coming into it. I quite like the approach they take to this for a lot of the high octane songs, because the drummer really lends to that this time with a lot of backbeat, constant collisions between the snare and drums.
Yeah,
there's a lot of room taken up with the drums this time, and that's to keep kind of a real pace to this album for the most part. Even though it seems light, it can seem pretty heavy, and you know, the new guitar has lent to that, and it leads to some exciting experimentation as well this time, which I'm glad they keep pushing that.
Yeah,
because you could easily stall with the same old spiel.
Do you not feel maybe some of the experimental what would you call it, spirit of the third album is peeled back to make way for songs that more amalgamate what the band has done up to this point in each individual song?
I think it feels like the whole whole career in this album turned up to 11. Because it's seriously intense at points.
Yeah.
And very... You gotta listen to it multiple times to wrap your heads around different melodies colliding with each other.
Mm.
And yet it being a totally relaxing song. There's songs like that in this that take a lot of thought, which I quite enjoy working for my music like that.
Sure.
But... Yeah, I would say there is... a bit of avant-garde.
There's a ballady number towards the end, which is something
that's
maybe
a
giving the
that's a feeler,
that right? One. Giving the singer more of a chance to shine, and perhaps, although she's always given it socks.
Yeah, there's I think the fourth song where she really gives it socks at the second half.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty incredible.
Look
myself.
At me.
Yeah. I quite like when it does that.
I do think the vocals, I remember going slightly over a line for me on the repeat EP, whereas I feel here, generally speaking, the vocals are very good.
She definitely has more to explore.
Right.
There's the rock side included, as well as the odd jazz J-pop side. And then, God, I can't remember the rhythm guitarist's name, or I guess she's the lead guitarist.
Motifor, I think her name is.
Yeah, she's incredible in this.
Yeah, this. Yeah,
she does some wondrous, odd things.
The guitar is
odd effects.
Very indebted to jazz, I would say, generally speaking, in terms of a lot of jazz chords, a lot of sevenths, all that good stuff that I associate with the band Karate. But it's been, you know, it's turned up to 11 here, and it's much faster paced and more energetic in this choruses, and in that way it's different. But
many different effects that could easily cloud something up completely, but don't. You can discern each instrument very nicely. There's one, I can't remember, it's a kind of a slow one.
Might be Smooth Sailing, the seventh track possibly.
Yeah, the does that kind of thing. But the song is very smooth, and I think it amalgamates pretty nicely. Do you prefer this out of all the things we've done so far with them?
Well, what I would say is I know that there were moments of the repeat EP that I actively really enjoyed, and then there were other moments where I felt that kind of repelled me a little bit, and that was broadly true for three as well. Whereas I feel here, I more just feel a general, this is competent, but it doesn't really do anything for me in a major way. It's just when it's on, it's fine, it's enjoyable enough, but I don't really take anything away from listening to it, unfortunately. I think that might just be me and this band. There have definitely been moments, and there are moments on this record where I go, that's really cool, but there's no single song where start to finish I think, wow, this is, I'm gonna like shout from the rooftops about
I'd say there's a whole load of them in this.
There is surprise.
Huge load.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's one that it's the fourth last track, I think, or maybe the one before that.
Sure.
The one before the album version song.
Okay.
I can't translate kanji this fast, so.
I have rough translations here, but it's not gonna be any use to the listener.
Yeah. But yeah, I really, really enjoy this one.
Great.
Yeah.
So where do you think it sits? Because I just don't have any... I can't differentiate. It's all a big tricot flavored soup to me. But
it kind of harkens back to the old stuff. But there's enough crazy weird that I love.
Just, and where do you feel like it sits in there? Because you're familiar with The as well, which was the second record.
The and then And, which I think And is my favorite one of
the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I think so. It reminds me a lot of Enemies.
So, oh really?
This band has always reminded me of a lot of Enemies and Light and that ilk. I cast them to that regard.
Yeah.
I really don't hear
that comparison.
You don't hear it directly. You don't hear it directly. I think it's the feel.
Yeah.
The energy they give it. The socks.
Yeah.
It's a combination of the real high octane drummers. They all have that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I put two and two together, and fuck, Enemies have toured with Light, so it all connects.
And these guys are... What label? Do you know what label it is?
I can't remember for the life of me.
Yeah, that's okay.
But it's a big one now.
Because I could see them being on Big Scary Monsters or something. You know, I could see it, but they would definitely be on the Avex, it's called, the label that's got them. But I do feel like in their quest for world domination, I almost wish...
I don't think they're trying to dominate.
Well, I do feel like they're definitely one of the more popular bands in the scene, and they've leaned into that in terms of the songwriting style. To me, doesn't feel, even though it has a lot of the trappings of that kind of avant-garde math scene, because a lot of the songs are quite verse chorus verse chorus verse chorus. It's
kind of
that to me wears a little thin. Whereas bands like Light and Enemies, and if you kind of want to go down that road.
I think that's the beauty of this kind of band.
Yeah.
They have both elements, and they can do both just as well into each other.
Yeah.
And if at the end of the day, if math rock is a bit too math rock for your brain, this kind of band can give you that.
Yeah. And if this gets somebody into that sound, that's great. And I've absolutely nothing against this band. I mean, I think, you know, they do something which, if it works for you, they do super, super well. It's something that occasionally, generally speaking, for like sections of every song, I'll go, oh cool, then there'll be something else that just won't click. But you know, I think they're good at what they do. And if this is this is your way into that scene or whatever, then great, you know, that's fantastic.
Because at least in my world, in the world of Dublin,
yeah,
not a lot of math rocky bands I can latch onto that haven't broken up or anything like
that. Yeah, true. So. I do think Bicurious might be a beacon for a new world. And Boko Tono as well are a fantastic band out of Galway.
But that's the thing. I'm so happy Tricot are making it up on the major labels with this kind of sound, which is not totally palatable. It's kind of weird, kind of weird for most of it. Even
though
the vocals do lend well to feeling good and stuff for the radio.
Yeah.
It's hard to grab onto.
I think it can be, and I just think maybe it's, I just have a bit of a mental block of I just find it very difficult to connect on an emotional level
I don't follow you for that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's, you know, it is what it is. I'm glad that you really got something out of it. Yeah. I think it's you know, at points super super competent and interesting, and then at other points it just doesn't quite capture my attention. But you know, but it's a good album from a good band.
Yeah,
yeah.
My favorite song is Mi Tete.
Okay. How far down the track list? I can give a translation.
That's Mi Tete. 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth track.
So Look at Me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the one when she freaking gives the socks at the end.
Very good.
Yeah, just kind of solos over everything.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm going to give it a 9.
Cool.
Yeah.
I quite like the final track, Pure Black.
Yeah, I like the way it connects to the one before it.
They make a nice couplet, the final two tracks, Pure White and Pure Black, so that's
a very Enemies track.
Joint. Yeah, actually. Yeah, though that's an interesting little section of the album that I quite enjoy. And I'm going to give it a 6.
It's fine. But absurd.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Black by Tricot. The next record we're going to talk about is from a band of, I would say, much less following, a pretty new band, and this is on their debut album. They're called Band-Aid Brigade from San Diego, California. And made up of two guys, Zach
that
Quinn.
Makes sense.
Yep. Quite sunny. Zach Quinn of a band called Pears and Brian Wallstrom of a band called Scorpios. I wasn't familiar with either of these bands, although I did get sent a little bit of Pears. And Pears is, you know, pretty high octane, like blistering kind of punk stuff, like melodic punk. Mm-hmm. So this, I didn't know what to expect when I was clicking into this album based on what I'd heard from Pears, but it was not what we get with this album, which is called I'm Separate, I believe.
It is.
And this came to me through my musical totem pole, JP Reed, who just slid into my DMs and sort of said, you might enjoy this, and spoilers, I really do. What did, before I sort of drown in a pool of my own drool, what did you think of Band-Aid Brigade?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
At the whim for whatever genre they may feel like.
Absolutely.
While still keeping very San Diego about it.
And I would say also, I wonder if there's any little bit of Boston in these guys too, because I hear a real that kind of Boston grit and grizzle in some of the delivery here.
Yeah, there's a city feel. Big city feel.
Big city feel, definitely. Right?
Which lends well to the influences, I'm sure. With,
Where do you start? I mean, Huey Lewis in the News.
It's 80s.
Bon Jovi.
It's 80s in the way that when I listen to, I don't know, contemporary or modern bands like Ninja Sex Party, like all the stuff they cover is very 80s sensible and Tupperware. They've all got that vibe. Yeah. They can hone in on it.
There's a lot of Elton John. I mean, there's also great bits of like on Treat Me Like a Christmas Tree and Holding Steady. I definitely hear more like, there's a little bit of Bruce Springsteen or that modern sort of blue collar Americana. There's little bits of like pop punk. There's just lashings of Blue Eyed Soul. Like there's a couple of incredible sax solos throughout this record, I think.
Oh, yeah. Treat Me Like a Christmas Tree was definitely...
Yeah.
The second half was really eye-opening.
Yeah.
As far as the record went along.
I think that track ends with like a Van Halen solo, as far as I remember.
Yeah, Van Halen plus a sax solo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm, it is. Unexpected.
Yeah.
And then we've got stuff like Travel Light, which for me reminds me of Electric Six.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Old school Electric Six. Right. Like early era, which is fun. So that gets a bit of the mid aughts.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Into their sound as well. So they're not just an 80s gushing band.
Yeah. But I mean, there's even like bits of disco and stuff on that track, like that. Mm-hmm. Stay busy, boom, dip, boom. Or like, you know, what Bruno Mars would have done with his like disco revival.
Yeah, the late groove, the late kind of groove that bands like Twilight Singers have done.
Yeah.
Light, it's very kind of light, not too hard rock, but no. A little bit of 80s classical rock.
Absolutely, because then on like Break the Grid... That's what I enjoy about the musical dexterity of this record, is that even though it generally sits in a very poppy sphere, because, and they've said this themselves, they're essentially looking back at the catalogue of sort of pop and rock music of the last sort of 30 years and literally plucking their favourite bits from each era and leaving the stuff they don't like. So you never actually know song to song what you're going to get. So like on Break the Grid, even though it's a very synth heavy, you know, you're more familiar with these bands than me, but I would say like Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, like
me and Bon Jovi. You went to see Bon Jovi.
No. But you like Def Leppard as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And more of those, like, you know, synth meets rock bands. Like Van Halen's another one, but
yeah. I would say more in the Elton John vein.
Or sure, well, that song is a bit more, is a bit more of a rock song, but then. You know, it's quite light, and then in the chorus he does a proper like break the grid for you, like there's a proper scream, and it's awesome because these guys obviously come from heavier backgrounds. They want to like when Astrid from Soilwork does the Night Flight Orchestra, it feels like this is glossy, perfectly packaged pop rock music, but it's made by people with a knowledge of a much broader depth of musical knowledge. So there's little flashes and hints of something a little bit darker at points. I think Treat Me Like a Christmas Tree has a bit of a darker feel to it.
It never quite gets there.
No, and it doesn't. And you wouldn't want it to.
It always keeps the guitar light.
Yes.
To make way for the piano more.
Yeah.
It's more a piano laden album.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Leads us, rather.
The piano does lead a lot of this record. And then
much like old school Elton John, even though that was classical, rocky, piano always led it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like Billy Joel would be another one.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, yeah, totally.
There's bits of that here as well. Then you've got much sort of quieter, contemplative moments. I Think It's Gonna Rain Today is this lovely, quite melancholy moment. And then there's tracks like, I think, Losing Light really reminds you of sort of Biffy B-side circa sort of maybe 2009 through 2013. So there's absolutely loads to pick from, and most of the stuff, even if it's not necessarily stuff that I generally enjoy, I can really, really appreciate it being put into the goulash here.
Yeah, I do. And I like the vocals and I don't like the vocals all at once.
Okay.
I think the vocals try to get to a point. There's elements where they try to really give it some some dirt to it.
Right.
I don't think they quite have, or one of the singers does. I don't think quite has the voice for it.
Okay.
For that kind of dirt that's required.
Right.
So I do like it when they keep it pretty melodical.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
This is some moments where I'm like, can't quite get that far. Sounds I wouldn't say it could have done with a bit more production.
Oh no way, this is one of the best sounding albums
of
the year
in the vocals.
Sure
Like a few more takes
maybe. I see what you mean.
Yeah because the rest of it sounds so seamless, and some of the vocals sound like things we'd probably do in our first takes. Not to say that's bad at all. I love the construction of how they sing, and it's very memorable. And some of the songs I love that have those vocals.
Yeah.
Just I don't have, and that's a small gripe for me.
Yeah,
really.
I guess I kind of can hear where you're coming from, but I think the vocal performance on this album is really excellent and quite
two vocals doing it right.
I believe the guys kind of tag in. I couldn't tell you who's who, but I really do enjoy the vocals, and I have to say one of the funniest songs I've heard in a long time is the secret bonus track, Riding on the Butt Train.
Oh yeah,
which comes in at the end of Nothing.
It's something else.
It's quite special, and you should really listen to yourself. It features an organ solo that I can't help but laugh at every single time. It is,
and it's how you end an album.
It's how you end an album.
The light heart.
I suppose it's a bit like the Tenacious D obviously is a comedy album, but ending it with that that secret track of Malibu Nights, Tangerine Dreams. I mean, that's what this is. It's just showing that the tongue has been firmly planted in cheek. You know, even though I think sometimes we've talked about albums like this before, I think this falls into loosely into the broad category of like Roswell Kid as well.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely twinkle in the eye, tongue in cheek. Like, but I think there's genuine emotion injected into a lot of these songs too. Like Break the Grid lyrically is very interesting. It seems to be about sort of a Tron type situation where people are trying to escape from a simulation.
It's great. It's got heart, and it's just,
yeah, it has a lot of heart.
It's just, I think that's the fact that they're very much having a good time.
Yes,
that's the one thing that really keeps you happy with this. Like they could totally get kind of emotional and sentimental about it all, but the fact that they're having fun makes it feel really nice to listen to.
Absolutely. What it sounds like is two musicians completely unshackled from any kind of genre constraints of what's cool, and maybe taking risks that they wouldn't have taken in their quote-unquote day jobs.
That's where I keep it with Electric Six into that. Just do whatever, because it's your music.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm conveying how much I like this.
No, well, some of the songs are kind of not my kind of songs.
Sure.
Not to say they're not bad.
Yeah.
Maybe near the end-ish, I'd say some of them kind of lose me a little bit.
Right.
But some of them are really strong. Like, a lot of this album is so strong. Like, 7% is...
Yeah.
It's stuff I don't listen to enough of. I don't really go back to the...
Yeah,
Elton John's and the classic rock 80s infused era stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really do that. So this is fun to get back into.
Yeah. I've just been
a nice break from the roaring heavy guitars.
It is. That's what I like about it. It's almost like it's musical headspace, but that still feels like it's got meat on its bones. It's a joy to listen to, but I also feel like it's infused with a lot of with sort of an emotional depth at points, while also bringing those huge sort of sing along moments. Like the end of Losing Light, it's just got a great, you know, a cappella introduction to the final chorus, and I think it's fantastic. Ever since I've like first heard this about, you know, 4 weeks ago, I've just been listening to it every chance I got. I've probably listened to it like, you know, 13, 14, 15 times, and I really, really like it. I think it's actually very special.
I went about two times, but I'll get there.
You gotta listen to them more than twice.
I know. Sorry, I've been giving the Tricot album a bit too much.
Okay.
Personally.
All right, we're gonna have to have a disciplinary meeting off mic.
Fighting the rooftop.
Yeah. We gotta have a threshold of like at least four. But yeah, it's my favorite album of the year so far. I'll put it that way. For sure.
We'll get to mine in a different podcast.
Okay, brilliant. Excellent. I think I have a feeling I know what that is. But this is I've been showing this to everyone who will listen, because I don't think...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It would be hard to... I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who this wouldn't bring a smile to their face, at least one or two of the songs. You know what I mean?
I do.
It's got a really broad appeal.
Yeah. Jeez, what's my favorite song?
What is your favorite song?
It changed today to Treat Me Like a Christmas Tree.
Yeah,
for the second half, even though I love Travel Light so much.
Yeah.
And Stay Busy and stuff like that.
Stay Busy!
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Stay Busy purely because of the sax solo. So what are you giving it? Treat Me Like a Christmas Tree?
Yeah, I'm giving it the highest 7 I can get.
Okay.
Yeah.
7 from Dill.
It's a grower.
Not a shower.
No, it is a shower. Yeah.
You ready for this?
A 17? I don't know. Off the charts? Is it off the chart vote?
Oh, well, I'm giving it a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
When's the last time you gave something like a 10?
It's been a long time, Dylan. I think it's been over a year.
I want you to try and find like the audio clip of your last 10 out of 10 and put it here.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, fuck's sake.
If we had proper metadata, that would be very easy for me to do. Yeah. But unfortunately, we don't. So, dear listener, if you remember what my last 10 out of 10 was, please...
Mail it.
Please mail it in. But I will tell you that I didn't give... any of my top five albums of last year 10 out of 10 when we reviewed them. Now,
I'm gonna be laughing if this doesn't get in the top five.
Well, listen, we'll see.
That's gonna be total, like,
as I said to you last week with the and so you will know us for the Trail of Dead record, if this isn't in my top 10, right, we will have had a stupendous
first
bumper
quarter.
All-time mm-hmm. incredible year for music.
I'm scared.
Because this album is phenomenal, I think. I think it's really, really, really special. And, you know, maybe the scoring system isn't quite fair because, you know, for an album to have an emotional impact on you and to be perfect for what it is, might be easier for one band than it is for another, or for one type of music than it is for another type of music.
Some songs can be complete 10s and 11s. And then, you know...
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to judge on an album base.
Yeah. But what I will say is, this type of music, this band, this album, it hits me in the right places.
Yeah.
And I think for what it is, it's perfect. So I'm giving it a 10 out of 10. I fucking love this album. It's called I'm Separate by Band-Aid Brigade. Check it out. My view of, like, a band's sort of obscurity or notoriety or whatever is... when I play them on Last.fm, does the album artwork come up in my little app? And for this band, that is not the case yet. So get streaming. It's been nice to see their songs climb up from, you know, sub 1,000 to like the biggest track has like 12,000 now. It's or like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. So listen to this band, love this band, and let's give them a career, because I think
they got a better album in them.
They might, and listen, I think so too. I think I would love to hear it. But anyway, let's move on. So that's Band-Aid Brigade and I'm Separate. Next up, it's another Dylan album. This is Be Up a Hello, the new album, the new lexically confusing album from Square Pusher. Also known to his mother as Tom Jenkinson.
Yeah.
This guy has been on the go in the...
Decades.
Well, as long as I've been alive, actually.
Yeah.
It's his 18th studio album, if you include all the various side projects and things. And he loosely sort of fits into the genre of music that's quite condescendingly known as intelligent dance music.
Just call it glitch pop.
It's definitely not complexdro. Maybe there's elements of glitch, but I think this is elements this of... predates.
Let's say it's
no. It's I'm not trying to be
a tsunami
obtuse.
Of glitch.
It's more so that I think what Square Pusher does on this album in particular, which is a very much a back to basics album for him, is he's emulating a sound that predates glitch as a genre. It
does.
Because this is what's it called, Hard Normal Daddy, his kind of breakthrough hit, his breakthrough album. This is very much kind of trying to recapture that magic, and so he used all analog synths from the 90s. So everything you hear here,
the same tool set he used,
exactly everything you hear here was produced and created exactly as it would have been in 1995 or 96
97
which, for somebody who, because I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, but for somebody who was not familiar at all with Square Pusher, although I can certainly hear the Aphex Twin comparisons, and I do love Aphex Twin, Square Pusher was not somebody I'd gone in on. So it was listening back to the more recent Square Pusher output, the sort of, because he's been releasing stuff consistently for the last sort of 25 years.
Yeah, and he did take a bit of a break to do some other stuff with different projects.
Yeah.
But this was constantly boiling in the back of his head, and it kind of shows that he wants to kind of bring it back around to what really made him excited for this kind of music.
Yeah, because this is a far cry from what he was doing even 2 years ago, or 3 years ago.
This is very complex drum and bass, real heavy backbeat stuff.
Yeah,
or breakbeat, sorry, that's the word. It's frantic.
Very frantic.
to understate it. Understatement of the year, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
At points. Then again, it's one of his happiest records.
Mm.
that slowly transcends into madness. I find that.
Well, it begins with it begins very strangely with Oberlove, which is mainly sort of a canon in D.
Yeah, but you wouldn't recognize it like that.
Well,
most people would not.
They might not initially sort of go, "Oh, it's canon in D," but they would kind of it would feel familiar, I think. And the first two tracks have a very almost sort of ice cream van feel to them.
Yeah,
I think
it's happy for him. Surprisingly
happy hardcore,
so, considering,
yeah.
considering his output lately, it was not that. It was kind of dark, and we'll get to it.
And quite musically rich, I would say, and expressive, and a bit more. Not analog, this is extremely analog, but a bit more human sounding, I would say. This to me feels like a fax machine making an album. You know, it's every beat, if you actually listen to it, especially in the songs that are particularly frenetic, like tracks like Speed Crank and Terminal Slam is another one, I think. Those tracks, you know, if you actually listen, they almost deliberately eschew any concept of rhythm that we know, or they're trying to get you to not dance, because the beat, every single iteration of the beat is different. So it'll be like the first one will be and then it'll change to every bar he changes where the bass and where the kick and the snare and the hi-hats and everything go. It's very disorientating.
Yeah, it crashes you around in his own waves.
Yes, absolutely,
you're at the whim of the music, which I find just much like soundtracks, you know.
And there's a very soundtracky feel to this record, for sure.
Video game-ish stuff as well.
Feels like a dark, what I was put in the mind of was like a very dark, Scandi independent film where somebody snaps and kills all their friends and family.
Yeah.
Definitely at certain points, like...
Something snapped.
Like Detroit People Mover and A.D. Angeland, the sort of the slower, swampier, darker, more kind of Vangelis type tracks, or even like Resonaticus Ross, like the darker, slower tracks. Yeah,
and as long as you know that's there in this painting he's made, I think that makes it a little more interesting than just the rave in the outer circles of hell.
Yeah,
sound that comes with the frantic stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's Technicolor, and the album cover lends well to that as well.
Yeah. Sort of an ASCII heart with various different colors in it. What I will say, and it's funny because I had this on in the car from my girlfriend.
Oh my god!
She said you don't need to change it, but I'm actively hating this auditory experience.
Yes.
It's like, okay, it is not music that lends itself well to being in the background, and because of the
depending on the party, and depending what drugs are
maybe.
Said party, I'm sure.
Because it's dance, it's interesting that this is called dance music, because really nothing about it lends itself to dancing.
It's
very much a head.
I'd say a lot of the drum and bass tin stuff can in the right environment.
But it's too fast for that. So the dancing to Speed Crank could be like, you'd be jerking around like you were, you know, in the middle of some sort of fit.
Trust me, people do.
Well, yeah.
There are gifts of people doing that.
So, I mean, what I think is this album to me feels like a thought experiment on behalf of Squarepusher. It's almost as though he sort of said to himself, how can I sort of go back, sort of reach back into the past, and using only the tools of the past, and create something that is even more
baffling.
Confrontational, even more baffling, even less palatable, but, you know, but still is recognizable as my work.
Yeah.
And push this out. And I wonder if Be Up A Hello might sort of register as more of a Korn 3 than anything else in his back catalogue. Will this be the album where he kind of went back to basics, and then as soon as that cycle was over, is he going to go back to...
Yeah, something you need to get out of your system, I'd reckon. But also prove to yourself that you can do what you did initially, but even better. Because I think this is one of my favorite of that style of his stuff.
See, it's funny. I almost think maybe I'm the wrong person to talk about this, because even though
I'd say you like a lot of Squarepusher stuff.
Well, I've listened to a lot of it now.
I prefer
thoroughly.
Yeah. I quite like a lot of it. It's on par with FX with me.
Yeah.
In terms of output.
What I will say is, What I will say is I really, really liked the sound of his more jazz-inspired albums, particularly this one that has the word rot in it somewhere. If I could find that. That was an album where every track I listened to, I said, wow, this is great. Music is rotted one note, which I believe was quite groundbreaking at the time for its inclusion of elements of jazz, and I thought that was fantastic. And then I also loved little bits and pieces from, like...
Showbelator 1 is my favourite of the few.
The Electrack, which I think is another Showbelator album I listened to a few from, and that was great. And Ufa Bulam as well, really, really good. So I think for me it's almost like the further back you go, the more similar to the Be Up A Hello material you get, the less interested I become, because for some reason I feel like there's an organic touch to even the early Aphex Twin stuff that where I feel Squarepusher was trying to sound more robotic.
I think as an
intentional thing.
Yeah, I think it's a fun experience. It's not my favorite experience, but it's a fun one, much like the early early Prodigy stuff is.
Sure. Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of that. There's this track that starts with that kind of very Prodigy.
I fucking love when it does that. Because it almost sounds like distorted guitars here at parts. But that's
Mekrev bass maybe is one that does sound like that.
The old school tech synth technology lends well to really making it sound like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of how like Trent Reznor got his start with making electronics and synth sound like guitars.
Yeah.
Thoroughly more threatening.
Yeah. And it is funny. I wonder what I mean, maybe he would sort of say, well, that's been done to death, but I wonder would I have preferred this had it been made using a combination of the authentic 90s synthesizers but somehow updated to today by using various different bells and whistles. Or he would sort of say, no, like this was you know, like that first Calvin Harris album, this was me using the restraints
of the only time you'll ever hear Calvin Harris. And like
you laugh, but that first Calvin Harris record is a very legitimate album, but you know, and it was created on, I believe, a Commodore 64, you know, or possibly an Amiga, but an old school computer. And those creative limitations can, you know, can make you work harder.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't doubt the effort that's gone into this.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, it's a lot.
I will try and... I'll need, like, lifetimes to figure out how he made some of this sound like it does. Mm. Where did he... Is that intentional? Is that weird blip?
Yeah.
12 feet intentional? Like, I can't make sense of some of this stuff. And that's my poor mind.
Your poor mind.
Really, you know?
All of our poor minds.
Like, kudos to that.
Yeah. It's an interesting one to review, because I do feel, while I found it educational to kind of go through Squarepusher's back catalogue and to listen to this record and kind of appreciate it for what it is, I do feel like I always have to sort of keep a bit of an academic distance, because beyond certain moments, particularly like the slightly lower key moments in this album and a few bits like Mekrev bass, like you said, I don't necessarily...
Excerpts.
I'm not necessarily enjoying my time with this album. It's
no,
more...
No, I think you're meant to feel threatened.
Yeah, I do feel... I feel a little threatened.
Yeah. A running theme with some albums.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the singularity has occurred and the machines are coming after us and they're not happy.
Yeah. But as long as you have that in the back of your head, you could like this a bit more for the experience, which it feels more of an experience than a... thing I'll come back to.
Yeah, I agree. You know? I agree. It's more sort of, we did that and that time of our lives is over. But, you know, I actually think I will take a second listen to some of the more recent but old but older than this album, that material, because he's a very accomplished bassist as well. And like he breaks out some fantastic live bass and a few of those live albums, and it's really, you know, it's really nice. And the guy's clearly incredibly talented. Like, this isn't... Yeah, I'm not going to give this a high score, but don't let that be a comment on how talented Squarepusher is, because clearly dude's got talent. Just this particular piece of art is not to my taste.
Yeah.
What is your favorite track? It's so hard to say.
No.
Because it's... Yeah.
I can. With the light stuff, it's Hitsonu.
Yeah.
And then with the frantic stuff, it's... Maybe four track.
Four track, yeah. For both, I'll take Mekrev bass because that has a little bit of both, and
Speed Crank's got that as well. I mean, I love the rave heavy stuff, and that's got a bit of constant.
Yeah. I don't even know what pills you'd have to be taking to be able to dance your whole way through Speed Crank.
It just takes you with it. You just pick and choose how you bop to it.
It's kind of how much of it you can bop to melodic at points as well. At certain points, yeah, sure, there's plenty of melody going on, but there are long stretches of time in this album where it's impossible to pick out a pitched
it's
note.
Incredible. Like it just hate it, but yeah, I love it. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's
I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's a thing. I'm glad you brought it in, but it's interesting. So yeah, so now after all that discussion, it's very hard to put a number on it. So go. I'll let you be the first.
It's a six.
Okay.
Because I understand it. Maybe a bit more than you might.
Yeah.
Right?
I think you're probably right, because I'm going to give it a four. Yeah. So there you go. But nonetheless, a very interesting experience.
From a 10 out of 10 guy.
Oh yeah,
right. Like no shit. He's up.
Well, I don't think there's any universe in which it's possible to compare Band Aid Brigade and Square Pusher, unfortunately. But based on my sort of knowledge of what I enjoy in electronic music, and my kind of that space, it's not for me. But again, there are moments that I quite enjoy, as I said, and I can certainly appreciate it that it's an impressive piece of work, but not one that I personally enjoy that much. So
I don't always put on albums onto this show that I love. This was confrontational for me.
Yeah.
As much as
well. Well, sometimes you have to take a punt and sort of say, you know, here's a record.
Here's an interesting record. Yeah, early. It's early on in the year, so not much is coming out. Or now stuff is, but at the point of choosing these albums,
absolutely. Well, I think Square Pusher definitely falls into the category of, you know, influential artist, new record, interesting topic of conversation, worth going in on because it's an interesting album to talk about, not necessarily because I think it's the greatest album ever, or you might say that, I don't know. And then sometimes you take a punt and sort of say, this album sounds good to me, but where are we gonna be 5-6 listens down the line? You never know.
Yeah.
Because albums can lose their flavor, or they can get better and better and better. Mm-hmm. So there's always that possibility as well. So that's Square Pusher, Be Up A Hello. It's a 6 from Dill and a 4 from me. Moving right along, we're going to talk about a band called Higher Power. Now, have you done most research on Higher Power?
Not really.
Okay, where do you think they're from?
Fuck, I don't know.
Based on the music.
LA?
I know, me too.
Jane's Addiction and all that,
for
right?
Sure they were in New York, but Higher Power are from Leeds, England. So make of that what you will.
You what, bitch?
They must have been brought up on a diet of pure New York swagger, because that is what 27 Miles Underwater is packed with. It's their second record from the Wizard Brothers. Jimmy and Alex Wizard on lead vocals and drums, joined by Louis Hardy on guitar and Max Harper also on guitar, and Ethan Wilkinson on bass. Jimmy Wizard, also known as J-Town, is the singer.
How many nicknames do you need?
That's all I got.
If your maiden nickname is not...
I think their name might actually be Wizard.
Wow.
I know. And produced by superstar producer Gil Norton, who you will remember from a lot of Pixies records.
Yeah.
Who I personally remember from a few Maximum Park records.
Yes.
He's also produced Pulled Apart by Horses, The Foo Fighters, including Color and the Shape, no big deal. Gomez, Jimmy, World of
Biggest
Theater.
Deal.
The biggest deal. No, Gil Norton is a really fantastic producer, and you know, maybe just to kick things off, this album sounds huge.
It punches
hard.
I'm serious whiplash from this kind of music. Turn up loud or quiet.
Yeah, and the whiplash of it too is that it sort of blends this Aggie New York hardcore. I'm not super familiar, especially with the old school.
It wears influences on its sleeves.
Yeah,
I mean, but from like the vocalist's use of kind of an Ozzy Osbourne twang, right? Second song practically sounds like Ozzy.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, he keeps that note that's very Ozzy with. There's a vocal filter that is there too.
Okay.
But that's not even counting the helmet Faith No More.
Oh, yeah.
Shugs that just drives on.
There's a little bit of like Every Time I Die, a little bit of Comeback Kid. I mean, it's and then. But I haven't heard people mentioning is I think in the choruses there's tons of like Teenage Wrist, Basement, Narrowhead, like all that good modern beefy alternative rock.
Yeah, that's where I almost went like, are these guys British? Because I did think that.
Yeah, and that me too. And then yeah, I was like this doesn't sound because you've got like Turnstile doing it the American way, which I like but don't love. I would say the band that. They Sorry, most yeah. remind me of, and who I fucking adore, is Drug Church.
Oh yeah,
but the choruses are they have okay. more of a, like a starry sparkle to them. I think here, like they go full
anthemic,
yeah. like dreamy, shoegazy, alternative rock in the choruses, which is awesome. And I haven't heard it done before.
Yeah,
because then you go.
There has been one or two, but well needed, because. Yeah, it's kind of like how Helmet kind of changed their way.
Yeah.
Their choruses glide on the more alt side of rock.
Yeah.
I think it's necessary for this kind of, the verses they hit, which are very, what's the word? What I'm looking for?
Beefy?
They're beefy.
Yeah.
Not to say they're not one note, but
yeah.
they keep on that side of heaviness
yeah.
and riffage.
It's right. almost they are too hardcore what like say like an In Flames or a Killswitch is to metal in terms of like the verses are quite reverent to the heavier side of that genre and then it switches to something much more melodic and catchy and anthemic in the chorus and I think you know that's a formula that can be jarring and it can be clumsy and it can be uninteresting but I think when it's done well and when the choruses are as good as they are here and when and when the guitar is particularly is so when the guitar lines are so well written it totally justifies it. I mean you know there's so many great examples like Staring at the Sun, Shedding Skin,
the solos got very kind of Guns N' Roses and Alice in Chains at parts. But then
right. just as quickly they'll switch to a, you know, like a Failure style, you know, or Teenage Wrist. Beautiful, super catchy, melodic licks that just elevate the song and are really fantastic. And then you've got, you know, In the Meantime, which is this lovely kind of slow jam ballad that builds and builds and builds into a big crescendo.
Yeah. What's the acoustic one?
That's In the Meantime.
Oh, I'm all right about that.
You don't like it? Oh, I love it. I love that track.
Some of the stuff I don't like too much, or I found a bit constant about the vocalist, that was all that was there with the acoustic when it was laid bare.
Sure.
So I like the whole shebang going off at once with this band, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't dislike the vocals at all. I love the vocals.
Because he has, you know, Jimmy Wizard, God bless him, like, I think it really works, but it took me a couple of listens to get used to his vocal stylings because he screams in a manner of speaking.
He does a couple things,
but it's more of a yell. It's more of a sort of impact, like and then his singing voice is a little bit like, you know,
it's James Addiction-y, right?
Exactly.
With like Perry's.
You could liken it to. I mean, people have been saying, oh, the melodic parts are pop punk. No, I don't think so. The only thing that I could vaguely say is maybe a little bit pop punk is some of his vocal stylings.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I think it's interesting this band because they wouldn't have the same broad appeal as some of the other bands that we've mentioned, just purely because it does contain the sort of screamy verses and stuff like that. But I still think you know, I could see this band playing pretty big rooms.
Yeah, I could. As far as like a real guitar or a really grindhouse guitar sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's intentionally abrasive.
Yeah.
Large, almost like Glassjaw and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, they would say themselves that Glassjaw and Deftones are two huge influences.
Entirely, and the glory of combining sounds that people should just go to town with. Like, just two distinct sounds. I don't care if they've been done to death before.
Yeah.
Do it in your own way.
Yeah.
And they'll write themselves through your personality to being unique, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And hearing a band that, you know, you could say, like, oh, maybe certain parts of this are derivative, but here, I don't think I've heard a band that's drawn in elements of, like, pure, like, aggy hardcore, post-hardcore, nu metal, and then that fantastic sort of new wave of, like, alternative rock revival that this band does in this way on this album. We've listened to Soulstructure, the first one, a couple times. Yeah. It's good, but it doesn't have the same punch because it doesn't have Gil Norton behind the, you know, behind the desk kind of nudging it.
I'll have to go back to that.
Yeah, but it's just everything about this album pushes them towards bigger and bigger venues in the sound, and I think it really works.
Yeah. Do you have any gripes? I think I have one little...
Actually, weirdly, no. For what this is, I love it.
I do.
Go ahead.
I think it does do that.
Mm-hmm.
The two things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But that's what it does.
Yeah.
For each song.
Sure.
It kind of follows the same formula.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I don't feel like the need to really go through this album from start to finish for me.
Okay.
Because a lot of the end sounds a bit like a lot of the beginning, as far as like song, as far as like the kind of the drop D riffage.
Yeah.
A lot of the elements are kind of similar, but they are different. It's different enough, you know.
It doesn't say it's welcome. I don't think.
No, it's just the same. They're in that world, so that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
But
then you've got like Rewire 101, which is shorter than the rest, and you've got In the Meantime, which maybe your mileage may vary, but I think that really breaks up the album nicely.
Yeah,
and then Drag the Line as a final track, I think, is just it's great to always put one of the most memorable tracks as the final one.
Yeah,
but that chorus of, you know, and I won't be the one. Now he does maybe slightly overuse the falling second, the nah, because that's the basis of a lot of the choruses here.
Yeah,
but
he'll probably learn to get rid of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sing well with it, so we might as well use it to death.
So I think basically take the blueprint of the slightly more melodic tracks like Shedding Skin, Drag the Line. I would say
Lost in Static to an extent.
And
that was the one that really made me think, okay, there's a third element of song coming into this, so that's a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But I think, you know, I think what I'd like to hear them do in the next one is expand the quieter songs.
Same.
Bring more melody into the verses, bring more aggression into the choruses, just
that'll
to kind
fun,
of
right?
even
yeah,
it out, it'd be fun.
It even more so,
play around with the formula, but do not lose the guitar tone, and don't lose the obviously like super like well written riffs and leads and, you know, kind of chords and all that stuff. Is just, I think it's really redone to a super high standard, so I'm very impressed by this. And I really kind of went in a little bit with an eyebrow raise, kind of, am I gonna enjoy this? And every time I listen to it, I just get something new out of it, so
yeah,
really like this.
I think so too.
Okay. Glad to hear it.
You know, I turn on any element of this album and I'll enjoy it.
Yeah,
I just think there's a lot of it, maybe two songs too much of the same sound, but that's a great sound still, right?
Yeah, I suppose they are in that genre of 25 minute albums, and it's a 35 minute album, so
yeah.
But for me it hits the sweet spot. I could see why.
Yeah,
if you don't love this sound,
yeah,
why maybe 35 minutes might be a bit
too. And in this genre, I've seen with so much rock lately, like the ceiling can be broken.
Yeah.
And they're still under that ceiling. But it's still high, and they're really changing it up a lot, which I appreciate.
But this is definitely my favorite thing that I've heard in this genre since 2018. Since like the golden age of like Teenagerist, Cro-Magnon and Jesus, and Drug Church's Cheer, and Basement.
Yeah. It's up there.
There wasn't much in that realm, I don't think, last year. I mean, the Cherry Glazer record you could maybe, but this is very different to that.
Yeah, there was a couple.
Yeah.
There was some that we didn't talk about, so
can't remember.
I'll pick it up later in the podcast, but
but I'm such a sucker for this sound, and I did feel like I was left last year, just as far as albums like this, left me a little cold, and sometimes it's just I like to put this on loud, and you just get an extra bit of swagger when you're walking down the street, and it's great. So my favorite track is probably Drag the Line, the last track.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Geez, mine would probably be Lost in Static. Yeah,
great.
I'm giving this an 8.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 9.
Yeah,
that's
all right.
So that's 27 Miles Underwater. That's a pretty glowing review from the two of us.
I love the album cover, by the way.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Old school.
Real old school.
Yeah.
real old school album cover there.
Photos layered on top of
photos. So it's kind of Pixies-esque, actually, in a way.
Yeah, it is.
Or maybe a helmet or something. You know, it's totally great. It's really, really good. It's Higher Power is the name of the band.
Yeah.
So that takes us to I think our final new release of the week.
Is it? Or is it?
Or are we moving on to our? Yeah. No. We really got through them pretty quick.
Yeah,
sorry. So it is time for our second Road to Sunstroke review.
Yeah.
Album band. And we're very, very excited for Sunstroke Festival, which comes to Punchestown Racecourse in County Kildare this coming June, it's the weekend of June 13th and 14th. As we, you know, said last week, some fantastic bands all the way from like Deftones, Mastodon, Gojira, all the way down to, you know, smaller bands that we love, like Poppy, like Fire From The Gods or While She Sleeps. And Curb Dog and Fan Club and Dinosaur Pileup, and there's tons.
We'll cover them. Sure.
Oh yes, we will. So what we're doing is every week, just for a change, we are kind of tackling one major artist from the lineup, and an album that one of us might be familiar with, but the other isn't. Sort of a classic album or a hidden gem, and it's kind of our way of getting ready for the festival. So this week we are going all the way back to the year of my birth, 1992, and Faith No More's Angel Dust, which
third album.
Fourth album. I think you've got We Care a Lot.
Yeah.
Something about Thanks for Noticing, or that, and then The Real Thing.
Yep.
And then Angel Dust. So their fourth album, and their second album with vocalist Mike Patton.
Yes, and first with writing credits with Mike Patton.
Aha.
Therefore, this is technically the one that started it for most people, as far as him being the.
The leader of Faith No More.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just his input is shining in it.
Sure.
Even though he was in the last one.
Yeah.
But more so used as a, hey, we need a vocalist to do this stuff. Write lyrics in 2 weeks. And, you know, that was the most well-recognized one. But for me, this is my favorite. And a lot of people's favorites.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people's not favorites.
Okay.
As we'll find out.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe this is your favorite. I came into this totally cold. I think I listened to it, and obviously I recognized the theme from Midnight Cowboy, because that's a pretty well-known melody, but it's a cover. And I think I may
Midnight
have
Crisis?
Heard...
You played GTA San Andreas.
Mm-mm. No, I didn't.
Fuck's sake, dude.
I was still pod person at that point. I definitely heard Smaller and Smaller before, but that's the only song that I recognized. So why,
which is quite ironic, because that's the one song they've only played twice in their career live.
Really? Wow. It's a good song.
Apparently they're not attached to it as much as we are, but that's the beauty of this band.
Okay.
They do what they want.
This band,
they really do
definitely do what they want.
As of this album, they do what they want.
Can I maybe give you a slightly odd take? What was the first thing this reminded me of, and it continued to remind me of all the way through every listen? I've listened to this maybe 8 or 9 times, and I cannot shake this comparison that I've never heard anybody else make to Faith No More, and on the face of it seems absurd. This really sounds like Awake era Dream Theater.
Okay, I know that era,
right
actually.
Down to the Kevin Moore type synths and the guitar tone and the weird songwriting structures and everything, not vocally at all. And obviously there's moments
I know,
like,
the part you're talking
about. There's moments like pummeling hardcore that don't come into that at all, but the kind of the chuggy 90s guitar, the kind synth. The synths, everything that puts me right in that mindset of Awake.
I hope that's a good mindset weird mindset.
It's a weird mindset with Faith No More's songwriting style, I would say.
Yeah.
There's like moments
they're infamously out to weird you out,
definitely
with how frantic they are with their placing of songs and albums.
Yeah.
What genre they choose that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you've got sort of there's a Primus sensibility to some of this.
Yeah. Would you say in the lyrics?
Yes.
And the vocals?
Yes.
Because that's Mike Patton delivering his gusto.
Yeah.
Do you know some of the weird stuff he did lyrically? I think Land of Sunshine, the first song,
right,
was the lyrics. A lot of the lyrics were a combination of he ordered a ton, like a fuckload of fortune cookies.
Okay.
Like read out the labels.
Oh, really?
Like tons of that real wholesome advice.
Okay.
And then he coupled that with some Oxfordian questionnaire that the Church of Scientology used.
Okay.
And that stuff is weird and demented.
Yeah.
And just off-putting. So he combined them two together.
Wow.
And that's what the lyrics for Land of Sunshine are. So
yeah,
that's what you're getting into, I guess.
He's a very idiosyncratic vocalist. And, you know, it is impressive that, you know, the same guy can kind of do so much. There's pretty guttural kind of screaming on this record.
He comes off a lot different than he did in The Real Thing.
Yeah, definitely.
That was very much rap metal-ish.
From a lot of elements of that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, you're ripping off the Red Hot Chili Peppers with your long hair and your rap rocking.
I couldn't
kind of.
Yeah, that was one thing. I listened to the
Epic,
entire.
Right?
Yeah,
the song Epic.
I do know the song Epic. I just. Maybe it's just my ear, but
I can't. That was totally a thing that people got in his
grill about. A friend of mine, I literally said, oh, we're doing Faith No More this week on the show. And he goes, Red Hot Chili Peppers ripoffs. And I've been listening to so much Faith No More this week. I listened to like the entire ultimate mega super greatest hits of the universe. And I've been hitting this album really, really hard. And I've been listening to it.
I don't think your friends ever listened to Faith No More as a whole.
I can't hear a single. I mean, whatever you think about them. And spoiler alert, this isn't my favorite album of all time. I can certainly appreciate lots of elements of this, but one thing I don't hear any elements of is Red Hot Chili Peppers. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a tiny little bit of like sort of slappy type bass once or twice throughout the record.
I think people are mostly talking about The Real Thing.
Yeah, they must be
to an extent. And even still, that's like a bit of one song.
Yeah,
like a verse to Epic, I guess.
Yeah. No, for sure. That struck me as really, really, really weird.
But the real thing that people love with Faith No More, at least what I love, a lot is the way the drums and bass kind of punch and
clink
and clamp together. It's a really nice thing in the zeitgeist of the early 90s that I quite enjoy.
It's just such a weird mishmash of like prog metal, funk, alternative rock, industrial, goth, like murder ballad type shit, Primacy kind of stuff. It's avant-garde, it's weird, but it's also really poppy, and it's kind of like cheesy denim leather type metal at points.
And they can do the real poppy stuff so well. I'm not sure if that's the stuff that you really latched onto, like the Midlife Crisis, Kindergarten's
an interesting one.
A small victory to an extent.
Yeah, I really, really love the I love the intro of Kindergarten. The dun 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 dun. That's
it's
really cool.
It's a nostalgia trip. That just the 90s appear in my brain.
It's yeah,
that happens.
But I wonder if Faith No More are one of those bands where you kind of had to be there, because while I can listen to this and I get it to a certain extent.
There's some factoids about this.
Yeah.
Did you know the guitarist wasn't totally on board with this album?
Interesting.
And the way in which it was recorded, like the scheduling, was not fun for him.
Sure, okay.
And it wasn't totally his brand.
Right.
This is the last one with the guitarist of the last few albums.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Who's very much the metalhead of the whole operation.
Okay.
So you can tell the odd Midlife Crisis R&B drumming and the odd sampling and that stuff, it kind of didn't overshadow the metal drums, because the metal is there.
And sorry, is this Jim Martin on guitar? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, okay.
But he just, He had, I don't think he was too keen on the balance.
Yeah, it is.
Lends so well to Faith No More's progression as they right till now.
And yeah, and that's interesting because a lot of the stuff. I mean, I was, as I say, I was listening to sort of a general sort of selection of songs, but
like for me, it gets better and better, and this is the start of that moment.
Yeah, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah,
no, but it's interesting you say that, right? Because as I was listening through sort of select like essential tracks from Faith No More, the ones that I was going, ooh, what album is this off? Were all from Album of the Year. That was the one where I kept on going, oh, this is this is great. This is great. This
and
is
the
great
one before that. And my favorite is actually the
King for a Day.
No, the latest one.
Oh, Sol Invictus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just thematically is just so unique.
I don't think I've listened to that one at all.
It's
really
a fun one.
I'll have to check it out. But yeah, I definitely heard a little bit of push and pull between, like, on the one hand, tracks like Or V, which was quite strange.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh yeah,
odd and kind of
operatic and weird.
Yeah,
and oddly Italian, which Mike Patton has been known to do some of that stuff in a solo proceedings lately, which has been fun.
Right, yeah, it has a very weird feel to it. Like almost sort of like TV soundtrack or something, yeah. and then all the way through to like very, very heavy, like pure sort of metal hardcore. Yeah, yeah, Malpractice is the
crack
one.
Hitler.
Yeah. Jizz Lobber.
Like this is the follow up to one of probably the biggest selling record of that year. Before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And here's Jizz Lobber and Crack Hitler. Yeah. Go figure what we're trying to go for, because we don't necessarily even know either. We're just having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And there's a humor to it.
Yeah.
Like fucking was it where is it? Be Aggressive.
Yeah. The cheerleader chants.
No, it's not just cheerleader chants, but the verse lyrics or the chorus lyrics or I guess it's kind of
both.
Yeah. it's about male oral sex.
Okay.
Written by the lyrics written by the keyboardist who is gay.
Okay.
And he found it hilarious.
Yeah.
That Mike had the gusto to that you're gonna sing this from now on.
Sing about BJs, yeah. Yes.
In my stead, you will sing about male sex and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, right?
I find that so fun.
It is fun. It is fun.
Right.
Here's the thing, right? You know, Mike Patton is the talking point of any discussion about Faith No More. And
I like the whole shebang.
Yeah, but no. And that's,
I get what you mean.
And I can sort of hear the appeal of the whole shebang. But Mike Patton's name is bandied about in a lot of the same sentences as our good friend from Tool, Maynard James Keenan, as being sort of the upper A, triple A tier echelon of vocalists.
I would say more with Devin Townsend.
Okay.
And Kyo, as far as like what they're willing to do with their vocals.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But as far as fame is concerned, yeah.
But yeah, no, but like, but it's more in terms of like his sort of acrobatic dexterity as a vocalist. And I'm just not a massive lover of his tonality, of the kind of... It's fine. It's very
all,
90s.
And it's not all the time.
No, it's not all the
which
time.
Is interesting.
His scream is cool. His singing voice, I kind of take or leave, and I can totally understand how people would, that's a thing where you go, well, I just love Mike Patton. Like the way some people hate Anthony Kiedis. They hate that band because they can't stand Anthony Kiedis' voice. I don't feel that strongly either way about Mike Patton.
Well, I like Mike Patton's singing voice a lot in the middle of crisis stuff. Like,
yeah.
Do you like that a bit more than some other singing parts?
What's the hook in Midlife Crisis again?
You're perfect. Yes, it's true. Without me, it's only you.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's fine.
It's the kind of Layne Staley stuff.
Layne Staley. That is actually the person that I'm thinking. I'm just not a massive lover of that. I feel like it's a very. I feel like type Peter Steele. Peter Steele always did it really, really well. But he definitely has a deep in the boots.
Hard to detect that, but yeah,
like deep in the bayou kind of like gothy type tone to his voice, and it's perfectly appropriate for some of the material on here. But it just didn't strike me immediately as being like my favorite voice ever. You know? That's all.
Later on, it becomes apparent in the albums that I start preferring his voice more.
Yeah,
it just gets into the new style.
Yeah,
because if you listen to the real thing, his voice, it's almost like he took some voice deepening pills or something.
Okay,
like his voice is and now it's
much
of a difference.
Yeah,
more nasally in the real thing, and this is just kind of. He's getting there, I think. This is a progression.
Right.
Like, it's not my favorite album of theirs.
No, but it's... I think it's an interesting jumping off point anyway, because it's...
Yeah.
It's very much of its time, while also feeling quite forward-looking in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And so abrasive for that time, yeah.
Yeah, really. Absolutely. No, it's cool, and you know, I can appreciate that it does a lot that I haven't heard before, and in other ways it combines a lot of things that I may have heard before in new and interesting ways, and it's definitely not the end of my Faith No More journey, and I have a feeling I'll like album of the year. I'm gonna listen to album of the year in Sol Invictus, I think, this week, just to see
the one in the middle, the one with the dog,
King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime, that one. Just based on the couple of tracks I heard, seemed to have a little bit more of this energy to it, so I might leave that one for another couple of weeks. What I will say is, I'm sure they'll play a lot of. There's a lot of material from this album on their greatest hits.
This one is the one of the kind.
Yeah, and I'm sure they bust out a lot of these tracks live, huh?
Yes.
So I'm excited to see how what do these songs from like nearly 28 years ago sound like. In 2020.
Oh, it's a lot, they have a lot of fun.
On a main stage.
I'd say you would actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
Quite thoroughly.
Yeah, well, I'll know them now. So, I mean, get 3 pints into me or 3 or 4 pints into me. Yeah. And I'll be singing along. Absolutely.
some of the weird stuff I liked. Oh, we'll end kind of like... I liked... I think it's... Maybe Smaller and Smaller.
Mm.
Everything's Ruined. That's actually one of my favorite.
Well, Everything's Ruined has a great
It does
chorus.
A lot of different things.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. It starts real light, melodic with piano and stuff, and then I don't know what it does. I can't place it, but it gets heavy, and it gets... it does the alt weird alt 90s rock that I love. It does it all. That's actually one of the more emotional songs, I think.
Yeah. No, it's cool.
Even though a lot of this is tongue-in-cheek, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the point where, like, there are songs that, Kindergarten, even the lyrics are very tongue-in-cheek. Like, you know, kid doesn't want to grow up. And then, like, songs that you crack Hitler and Jizz Lobber. And then, of course, the sort of bonus track, which I didn't include in most of my listens, but have listened to a few times, is
Easy,
which I think is...
The cover.
Yeah, it's, like, their most popular song.
They do it so well.
It's a very straightforward cover.
I know, right?
I don't know.
If they just do it and do it well.
I literally messaged because I felt like...
People recognize it more than the original sometimes.
Yeah, but it sounds very, very similar to the Lionel Richie original. I say that last night, Winchester, the support act for Tenacious D, played a cover of Easy by Lionel Richie. But, you know, it was like souped up. It was bluegrass. You know, you could tell it was Easy. But this doesn't even sound like anything else by Faith No More. It just sounds like... Kind of like Lionel. It's just sort of, it's a very straightforward cover sung by Mike Patton.
There's bits you'll see with like album of the year and where they go kind of chill groove.
Yeah,
they do get sexy with it. So they will surprise you.
But I had to sort of even check with the world's Faith No More expert Stephen Hill and ask him how a very straight ahead reverent cover of Lionel Richie got so popular, and he just sort of. Said he couldn't explain it. It was a big hit. It was on one of their singles, and it just became big for them. But I wonder though, do the band would bust it out live every time? I'm sure.
Quite often.
I wonder if there are people that like only like that song, because I could see you enjoying Easy, but then not, but then being pushed away by the other material.
I think you really end up enjoying everything live.
Okay,
it's that kind of audience that really hits. You'll see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
If you just watch some of their download videos, festival videos of the 2015 era.
I'll have to do that.
And you'll see the vibe, and the vibe is totally everybody's on board with everything.
They're a singular band, and I don't feel like I'm in the club yet, but I'm getting there.
I've always got room for them.
yeah.
and their weirdness. I just want them to do another album. I think that's going to happen this year. That's going to be later on in the year. That's going to be the new one.
Yeah, and we'll certainly cover it if they do.
Yeah.
But you know, a bit like, you know, when everything clicked with Tool, or you know, it's of,
I think
that,
this is more of a,
it's of that size,
a Sisyphus kind of ordeal for you than Tool. But like, this is a challenge.
It is a challenge.
This album was a challenge for fans as well, yeah. as naysayers. Yeah. Like,
absolutely. But you know, I've cracked open the door, and you know, I'm committed. I'm committed to getting to know this band, because they're a name that comes up all the time, and I do feel like this has been a big step towards that journey. So, people, yeah, this is the kind of band I'm sure people fucking, they just go nuts for Faith No More. So I wanna understand it, and I'm partially understanding it now.
You will soon enough.
So yeah, fantastic. All right, so
what do we do next?
What are we gonna do next? Well, I sort of challenged myself. With Faith No More. So Dylan, I guess that means it's your turn. What's our next stop on the road to Sunstroke? Okay, so Dylan, what are we doing?
We're doing Union Black by Skindred.
Skindred.
We've covered them before, but that was a recent one. It's my favorite.
It's gonna be big tings.
It's gonna be big, man.
Big tings on the podcast next time. Yeah. That's exciting. Skindred. They're a notorious party band.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to party.
Yeah.
In preparation for this this review.
Mm-hmm.
So good stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. I think it was a really, really varied week. I mean, we went everywhere from like 90s happy hardcore to happy 2020s hardcore.
Yeah.
Of a very different sort. So it was great as always. You can find us on our new look website, killshuffle.wordpress.com. Follow us on Spotify. That's where you'll find our playlist. That's where you'll find the show. You can follow us. That makes it easier for us to figure out who's listening. So follow us on Spotify. That's the best place to find the show. But we're also on all your podcast apps, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Dylan, any parting words for the boys and girls?
Nah, man. Let's enjoy it.
You're just still in the skin. You're still in skin dread mode.
I am. Let's just enjoy this week.
Let's just enjoy the week. And
I'm way too excited to cover the next album. Yes, I'll tell you that.
Take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.